Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And today, I can make one of the very rare guarantees that today's show is going to be magical, and that is because we have Michael Grandinetti. He is not your ordinary magician. With performances on national and international television, in stadiums, arenas, casinos, and theaters around the country, with symphony orchestras for the NFL halftime shows and major sporting events, for Fortune 500 companies, and even at the White House, Michael has made a name for himself around the world as an extremely talented and innovative illusionist. Over the past 20 years, Michael has been driven to make magic contemporary and to give it a wide mainstream appeal. He has been featured on NBC's The World's Most Dangerous Magic 2 television special, The CW's Master of Illusion series, and Pop TV's Don't Blink series, as well as CBS Sports, Access Hollywood, Entertainment Tonight, SportsCenter, Pardon the Interruption, NBA on TNT, New York Today, and the Jerry Lewis MDA Telethon. He has also appeared as a guest on national radio shows and in media, including Parade Magazine, Star Pulse, Magic Magazine, and TV Media Insights. Michael was recently on the cover of TV Times magazine, released nationally in newspapers across the U.S. In addition, Entertainment Weekly named Michael as one of the magicians they would like to see with their own television series, calling him a great magician who can truly communicate with a TV audience. For more information, you can visit Michael's website, which is www.michaelgrandinetti.com, and I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description, and also you can watch his video highlights on YouTube, and I do have a link to that as well in the show page description. So I'd like to welcome Michael to the show. Good day, Michael.
Robert, how are you? Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for that fantastic introduction. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Boy, you have so many, you got so much street cred there. It took me 5 minutes to get it all out, but that's great. You know, it's wonderful that you're able to entertain in so many different venues.
Well, you know, I'm a lucky guy. I get to do what I love to do, and I get to do what I wanted to do since I was 5 years old. And I know it's very rare, you know, for people to be able to say that they're doing, you know, living their childhood dreams. So I don't take it for granted. I am very fortunate.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, let's start. First of all, I noticed that sometimes you're referred to as a magician and sometimes as an illusionist. Is there any distinction between the two, or is it just interchangeable?
Well, that's a very good question. Well, you know what? Technically, I am both. And I'll kind of tell you what I mean by that. And I have to tell you, please excuse my voice. We've been on the road for the past 2 weeks, a lot of airplanes. So you're getting my airplane horse voice today, so I do apologize for that. But a lot of throat clearing. I apologize in advance.
That's
but,
okay.
A magician is basically a performer who does magic, which is certainly what I do. I think the word illusionist has a connotation of some of the larger effects in magic. You know, illusions tend to be things like making people float in the air, vanishing or making large objects appear or disappear, cutting people in half. Those are larger illusions, which I love. That's a branch of magic that I love. So I'm certainly an illusionist as well. So I think both apply. One just kind of connotates if you do some of the larger effects as compared to close-up sleight of hand, which is more in the realm of, you know, close-up magic.
Okay, well, great. It's good to know the distinction because, you know, like I say, I've seen them both, and now I know the difference. So it's great. Now, in your online bio and what I read in the introduction to you, it indicated that you're driven to make magic contemporary. Exactly, you know, what do you mean by that, and how is it that you are working toward making that so?
Well, you know, magic is one of the oldest arts in the world. I mean, it dates back thousands of years. I've always been fascinated with magic history, and if you go back and you look at it, there's been different styles of magic and different styles of performers throughout the years. And I think, like any art form, to keep it relevant, to keep it engaging, magic has to grow with the times in the right way. You know, and for me, the goal is to make it so that our magic and the show that we do appeals to a very broad audience. You know, I think that's one of the strengths of magic, that it appeals to people of all ages and all demographics, and even internationally, because it's so visual. So our goal is to make it entertaining, engaging, give it the right pace so that, you know, audiences who are so used to today having so much information kind of coming at us at all times, so the show has a nice feel to it, a nice flow to it, And above all, make it an enjoyable experience for people, again, of all ages. So we try and really, and another kind of element to that, we're always trying to create and add brand new illusions to our show. We take historical premises, such as, I'll give you a couple of examples, such as the famous sawing a person in half, which I'm sure you've seen, you know, before. But we take that premise and we try and come up with a new spin on it, a new way to do it. We've done that with levitation illusions. We've done that with illusions where I walk through walls. So it's also taking, you know, classic premises and making them modern and kind of putting a fresh spin on them. So that's a long answer to your question, but, you know, I really try and put a lot of thought into doing just that, making magic modern, contemporary, and engaging for today's audiences.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, I could see, you know, that's so, and, you know, you referenced when it came time to creating new illusions, you used we. So do you have, like, a team of people that you work with creating these either new versions or new illusions altogether?
Well, the way that process typically works is I will come up with an idea, or it'll either be a kind of a variation on a classic theme in magic. For example, like I said, a sawing in half. We're working on a brand new way to, you know, cut somebody in half as we speak. Or I'll come up with a completely unusual premise. We have an illusion in our show where I take a rose bush back and forward through time. And that's a premise that really hasn't been done before. Now, once I have the idea, I will kind of design it through and through and come up with a presentation, and then I'll collaborate with builders and engineers who will build our props. And then once we have the props in hand, I will meet with our stage team, the people who travel with us around the country. I have a wonderful team of assistants and dancers, and, you know, I can never refer to our show as I. It's got to be we, because it's definitely a team effort. It's like a band. You know, everybody does their parts. Excuse me. And everybody contributes. So once we have the props, then we rehearse them, and we work on them sometimes for months and months before we ever put them in a show. And then we put them in a show and test them out. And then once we put them in a show, they, you know, we see what we like and what we don't like, and we're constantly adjusting from there. So it's a process, but it definitely, you know, I definitely have a lot of, you know, people who are involved and who contribute to it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure, you know, just from concept through implementation, I mean, you know, it sounds like it's quite involved. Now, you mentioned, you know, in the beginning that age five was the time when, you know, you kind of first started. So I would love for you to share, you know, exactly how it was that you got interested at that particular age, and then your first experience as far as doing magic and, like, in front of a group.
Robert, I got to tell you, I remember all that like it was yesterday. And it was a few years ago, but I got this magic set, like, for Christmas. And I think, like a lot of kids, you know, I think it's a very popular gift for birthdays and for holidays and you know, what have you. But for some reason, when I got this magic set, and I ran down the stairs and I saw it under the tree, it just grabbed me. I was just instantly taken with it. I think it was the first thing that I opened up you know, I even kind of remember my parents saying, you know, you have other things under there, but I was just hooked with this magic set. There was something about it. And, you know, I couldn't even at that age, at 5 years old, I couldn't even really read and learn the tricks and the instructions. So I had we had family come in. I had an older cousin who came in and kind of worked with me on this when I was, you know, that morning when I first got it. But I just felt the passion for it right then and there. And that was it. I was hooked. And I took this magic set. My first show was, I took this magic set into show and tell for my kindergarten class, you know, when I was 5. And I could still remember sitting there in the class, and I was shy. I should tell you, I was a shy kid. I think a lot of performers tend to start out as you know, shy children as well. But anyway, so I'm sitting there watching the show and tell, and I remember a girl got up before me with the same magic set. And I remember thinking, that's it. It's all over. You know, I'm stuck here. I could still remember. I didn't know what I was going to do. I figured, well, she was going to show them everything. What can I possibly do? But for some reason, when it was my turn, I got up there and I did, you know, I did the magic and the magic set. And the kids responded and the teachers smiled. And, you know, I could still see them in my mind, all of them sitting there on the blue carpet in the room and the teachers kind of sitting in the back. And for a shy kid, that has a pretty strong impact to get that kind of response from people. So I thought, this is it. I've got to do more of this. So then for every kind of, you know, birthday or holiday, my parents would search out other magic sets at the toy stores or you know, anywhere they could find, basically. I would go to the school library and look for magic books. We had a library in our community. I miss libraries, by the way. Those are great. I mean, I used to have one. I mean, there aren't a lot of them around anymore, but, man, I went to this library and just they had a kind of a row of magic books. And it was great. So I would take those out. And, again, I became very just hungry to learn everything I could about magic. And then we found a magic store in downtown Pittsburgh. So as I got a little bit older, about 6, 7, 8 years old, my dad would take me down there every couple of weeks, and I would spend my allowance on, you know, new magic. And, you know, he had to pull me out of there. I would spend hours in that magic store, like going through everything they had in their glass cases. And, you know, he would literally have to go out and, you know, consistently keep feeding more money in the parking meters because I just never wanted to leave. But he was incredibly patient and incredibly supportive. And that's kind of, you know, how I got off and running as a kid. And it was great. It always made me so excited. It still makes me excited. But it added such a positive kind of force in my life at that young age. It gave me something to work towards. It gave me goals. It gave me something to have fun with. It gave me something to be creative with. Gave me something to communicate with others with, again, for being shy. I think that was tremendously helpful. So it was just a really, you know, positive thing to have found.
Yeah, that's good. You know, with children who are shy, performing sometimes is a great way to overcome that because it provides a structure for being able to, you know, be outgoing, you know, and be able to not really have to interact, but just be just to present themselves, you know, and be able to, you know, kind of just show the world who they are and, you know, kind of once the performance is over, they can, you know, go off stage and, you know, that's done, over and done with.
Yeah, completely. And you know what else helped me with that along those lines was the fact that, you know, I had the magic to fall back on. When I was performing, it wasn't just speaking to people. I knew that I had the magic to you know, hopefully give me something to amaze them with, or, you know, it wasn't just relying on speaking. And I think that was, you know, that was tremendously helpful. And through doing that, it allowed me to get very comfortable in talking to people and you know, in situations like that. And if somebody would have told me at that age or even my parents someday I'd be doing shows for, you know, large groups of people, I think we both would have said no way. But it just, you know, it was tremendously helpful. So yeah, it had a lot of positive impact on my life for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, as far as the type of magic that you do, one of the things I noticed on your website, it talks about you performing interactive magic, you know, and that's kind of with audience members. So can you give the listeners just an example of, you know, that type of magic that you do that requires interaction?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of my favorite parts of our show. I love the large illusions, but I love being able to interact with the audience. At many points throughout the show, we invite the audience members up on stage, and they will participate in the magic. And in many times, the magic happens to them in their hands. They, you know, it looks like they make the magic happen, or they play a vital role in the magic, really giving them a unique experience with the magic. I think if you're watching a magic show live, you know, it shouldn't be just like watching a movie or a TV show. You should really have that kind of engaging, interactive element. So I'll give you a couple of examples. One piece we do involves the entire audience at the exact same time. So if we're performing for, you know, 1,000 people, or last week we just did a show, we did the halftime show for the Arizona Cardinals at University of Phoenix Stadium, and there were 65,000 people in the stadium, and we did this illusion with them. So all 65,000 people participated at the same time. But it's an illusion where everybody participates using their hands, and they try and make the magic happen with their own hand. And I got to tell you, it's really fun to stand up there on stage and watch everybody following along and trying the magic themselves, and watching them react, and watching them respond, and watching them, you know, hopefully be amazed. And I love that. And then, like I said, at various points we get people up on stage. And yeah, an example of that would be we'll do pieces where the audience thinks of, where somebody up on stage will think of something, and I'll tell them what they're thinking. I do a piece where somebody thinks of any playing card, any card in the deck, and they put their hand they put their hand on my arm, and when they lift their hand off of my arm, the card that they're thinking of is written in big black symbols on my arm, right under where their hand was. We do a piece where I borrow three finger rings from the audience, and the rings vanish in a flash of light. And we discover the rings across the stage, inside a safe, tied on a ribbon that's baked inside a loaf of bread. And, you know, I got to tell you, you know, we'll do these shows where we do all of our, you know, large-scale illusions. And sometimes it's the interactive magic where people will come up to us after the show and talk about it. They'll say, I love that bread trick, or I love that trick with your arm, or I love it. So that just shows you the power of interacting with people and giving them a personal magic experience. And that's certainly one of the things that I really try and build into our show, is that, yes, we put in a lot of spectacular pieces, because that's what I always wanted to do. But we try and make it very engaging and very interactive. And that keeps it, I hope, fun for the audience, and it certainly makes it fun for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, everyone likes the idea or the thought that possibly they're, you know, it's within themselves to be able to be magical, you know, in a way. And I guess that kind of allows people to open up to that possibility.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I got to tell you, I think you hit the nail on the head, because, you know, magic, I think in some ways more than a lot of other entertainment mediums, maybe a lot of other art forms, has the ability to allow audiences to, number one, reconnect with the simple belief that anything is possible. It's a belief that we all had as kids. I think when we were kids, and maybe that's why I connected with magic, maybe that's why a lot of kids connect with magic, you know, at a young age, but we believe, you know, anything is possible. As we get older, we tend to lose that sense of believing in anything, and we become more cynical and so forth. But I think magic brings back that simple, uplifting, optimistic belief in the audience, number one. Number two, I watch people come in our show, particularly when we do shows on the weekends, a Friday, a Saturday night, and they've, you know, people have worked all week long. And again, in today's world, information is coming to people all the time. People, I think now more than ever, they're bombarded with just work and information, and you could see them coming in. They're tired after a long week. And we watch them walk out at intermission. We watch them walk out at the end of the show, and they look recharged and they look refreshed because I think, it uplifts them. And in a positive way, it somehow, I think, reconnects with that feeling that, to your point, that you know things that seem impossible might just be possible after all. That's a really, I think, beneficial thing, even if it's just in the back of your mind, to have. So, yeah, magic. I think it really has that positive effect on people.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the, you know, the idea, you know, but like you said, you know, if they have gone through a particularly stressful week, you know, the idea that, well, gosh, anything can happen, you know, and it's like maybe, you know, life isn't so bad, you know, that, you know, maybe what was a challenge this week will disappear next week. It was an illusion this week.
You know what? I think everybody needs to recharge. Everybody needs to let go and just, you know, let go of all the constant movement that's in their lives. And I think that, you know, magic serves that purpose in a really unique way. If you think about it, there aren't a lot of things in our daily life that give us that sense of amazement, that really makes us go, wow, and feel amazement. It's a very unique and rare and powerful and beneficial emotion. And magic is one of the few things that kind of gives us that. You know, I can't tell you, today that I felt amazed at all as I went through my daily, you know, besides working on, you know, the magic stuff. I can't, you know, again, it's just, and I would venture to say a lot of people would probably share that sense of, you know, they don't feel that so often. We're also caught up in our daily activities. So that emotion that comes through watching magic, I think just recharges people. It recharges their batteries. It recharges their emotions. Yeah, and people need that for sure.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, you know, aside from, you know, the big venues where you do like a mass kind of entire audience interactive thing, when you're selecting people, you know, to come up and, you know, take part in, you know, in a magic piece, is there anything that you look for, you know, in a person? I'm just curious because, you know, I'd be one of those in the audience that would never get picked. It's like, oh my gosh. But, you know, I mean, is there anything in particular you look for, or you just kind of look out there and then whoever strikes you, you choose?
That is a great question. Well, let me ask you, if you were watching a magic show in the audience, would you want to be picked or would you not want to be picked? And there's no wrong answer.
Now, that's a good question.
You know, some people are not comfortable and they don't want to go up on stage, and that's completely understandable. Yeah. But how would you feel? I'll answer the question.
Yeah, well, you know, as long as it wasn't a hypnosis thing, I think I wouldn't mind it.
Okay.
I'm not a kind of a hypnosis kind of guy. But and I would probably have a little bit of butterflies. So I mean, I guess maybe I wouldn't, you know, exude that pick me kind of look.
Well, I think what you said is part of the answer right there. I think what I look for is people who are making direct eye contact and who are smiling and who genuinely look like they want to come up on stage. If somebody's kind of looking down at their you know, lap or not making eye contact, or, you know, I will never pull somebody up on stage who just doesn't want to be there. For me, it's all about making it a fun experience for the audience. And the other thing is, you know, when we pull people up on stage, the magic never makes them look like they can't do something. It always makes them look like they can do something. So, you know, it is never about making the audience member look like they are less than in any way. It's about making them look like, you know, they are doing more than they ever thought that they could. So it's about making a very positive experience all the way through for the audience members who come up and join us. So, you know, that said, I look for people who have that kind of pick me, as you said, look in their eyes. You know it when you see it, and I'll give you another example. So we did a show last week for the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra, and it was so much fun. We performed our illusions while the orchestra provided live music accompaniment to our magic, And it was just a wonderful night, and the audience was fantastic. And at one point, I was going to pull somebody up from the audience to do that arm illusion I mentioned, where their thoughts appear written on my arm. And I said, you know, does somebody want to come up here and help me out? And this one young girl, she had to have been about maybe 8 or 9, about 3 rows back, just put her hand straight up and looked right at me and just had such a smile on her face and didn't have any fear, just truly wanted to come up, and you could just see it. It was, you know, you could just see it. And she came up on stage, and she did a wonderful job. And, you know, so that's what you just know when that sincere desire to come up on stage is there. And that's always what I look for. It just, you know it when you see it, and you know it when you don't see it. And I think it's really important for performers to look for and respect both signals from the audience.
Yeah, very much so. I just want to let the listeners know that in a couple of minutes, we're going to take a real short break. And if you would like to call in and ask Michael any question but how the magic is done, you can call it at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Michael, feel free to type it in, and we'll get to that after the break. So, and just kind of one last question regarding that interactive. Was there any kind of a memorable person or time that really stands out as, you know, particularly funny, or maybe where things didn't kind of go quite as expected? You know, anything that is like, oh, I remember that one, you know?
Well, we've definitely had all types of personalities up on stage. Sometimes you get people up on stage and they are just in their reactions more entertaining than, you know, any magic I could ever perform. There's just something about sometimes when you get people up, and, you know, it's always fun to watch people up there having fun. You know, I can't say there's any one experience that jumps out in my mind, but there are just, as you asked me that question, I probably had just a parade of images kind of flood through my mind of, you know, people over the years who have joined us up on stage, and they've all been a lot of fun. And it's always gone, you know, I can't say there've ever been, knock on wood, an experience that's ever gone in an unexpected way with audience members up on stage. Now, they've all been wonderful. They've all been fantastic. They've all, you know, I've got to watch them react to the magic up close, and I love that. That makes it fun for me. So, you know, there's just been a lot of good experiences. That's a part of my show that I'll never take out. You know, I need to have an interaction in a show. It really adds such a fun element to what we do. So, yeah, there's just a lot of them, I'll give you one more quick story. So this didn't happen on stage, but after the show, a lot of times we meet audience members. We'll go out in the lobby and, you know, I always love to thank people for coming to the show and to meet the people who came to the show. And we were doing a show in Reno last summer. We were in Reno, Nevada for 2 months. And, you know, during the 2 month run, I started to recognize people over and over again in the receiving line. And I asked one lady, I said, you know, you look very familiar. You know, you've been here before. And she said she came to the show 7 times.
Oh, wow.
And I said, 7 times? I said, you could probably get up and do the show after 7 times. You know, I said, that's wonderful. I thanked her for being so supportive. And then I said, you know, what makes somebody come to a magic show 7 times? I said, because the surprise isn't there. Obviously, you know what's going to happen. And she said, it just feels so good to watch people be amazed that, yes, I know what's going to happen, but now she kind of got what I get, which is, she knows what's going to happen, but now she gets to sit back and watch other people experience it. And I think she got the same pleasure out of it that I did. So that's something that I always remembered, is that, you know, other people were able to kind of share in that experience of watching people be amazed. And I love that. That made me very happy to hear.
Yeah, that's good. That's a really nice reminder for you, you know, of why it is that you do that, you know, and just exactly, you know, it kind of brings it, makes it clear that, you know, even though you've done it time and time and time again, that, you know, there is also that joy in watching other people discover it.
Absolutely. That is 100% true.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and take that quick break. And then when we return, I'd like to start with maybe I'll talk about different types of illusions. So, like, for example, I want to start with what your favorite one to perform. Okay?
Absolutely. I can't wait to play that one.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today, my very magical guest is Michael Grandinetti, and he is a master magician and illusionist. And you can find out more about Michael by visiting his website, which, again, is www.michaelgrandinetti.com. Again, there is a direct link in the show page description to that website. And also, definitely check out his video on YouTube, his video highlights. You'll be amazed. I got a link to that as well in the show page description. And on his website, he also has additional videos, photos, and you can also, you know, contact him to book him for your event or organization, and you will be the highlight of the event by getting him there. So anyway, with that, I'd like to welcome Michael back. Hello, Michael.
Thank you, Robert. I'm having so much fun talking to you. I certainly appreciate you having me on.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Okay, let's talk about what is your favorite illusion to perform?
Well, I got to tell you, there are a couple of answers to that question. I will answer it with you with my favorite, and I'll tell you why each one's my favorite. So one of the pieces in my show is a piece where I levitate 10 feet in the air. It's a piece that we've done in so many different locations. We just did it last week in our halftime show at University of Phoenix Stadium for the Arizona Cardinals. We've done it with symphony orchestras. We've done it in our casino shows. We've done it on television. And the reason I love that one is because ever since I was a kid, to me, anything floating in the air was magic to me. And I always said, someday I want to be able to float in the air. So it is the realization of a childhood dream that I get to live out in my show. So it is one of my absolute favorite illusions for that reason. I still feel like that 5-year-old kid who just found magic. So I think that's why that illusion holds a special place for me. Another one is a piece that I designed. It's an original illusion in our show where we have a 7-foot-tall, 4-foot-wide, 1-inch-thick plate of steel. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so you come from Pittsburgh, you have to do something with steel. And we get the audience up, and they examine the steel, and it's just a very solid, very heavy, not just ordinary big piece of steel. Anyways, I walk directly through the center of the piece of steel. I melt my body right through the center of it. And that's a piece that took 7 years to design, to build, rehearse, But it's 7 years from the time I had the idea that I wanted to do it to the time we actually put it on stage. And, you know, I'm very careful. When we put a piece in our show, I want it to be just right. So it takes a lot of work and a lot of time. And that one, it was really important to me that one was just perfect before we performed it. So a lot of trial and error, a lot of work on that one. So every time we do that, I know that it's just the realization of a lot of work. We do another piece in our show. It's a piece that I mentioned earlier. It was with a rose bush. And again, it's a completely original illusion where it starts out as a lifeless plant. And I take this lifeless plant back in time to when it was just starting out. And it becomes a little sprout. And that little sprout transforms into a full blooming rose bush that blooms roses that I pick off and give to people in the audience. And the story behind that one is how, as adults, sometimes we tend to lose our sense of amazement and magic. But if we remember what it's like when we were kids, when we were just starting out, then we'll see the magic that's all around us. So I kind of illustrate that story through doing this illusion. And, you know, I love that one because it conveys a philosophy that I think is very, very true. So we do a Dangerous Escape in the show. We do a couple of them, but there's one that we did on our NBC show a couple years ago where I get chained up between two walls of steel spikes. And this one you'll see in my video for sure, but I get chained up between these two walls of steel spikes, and they are foot-long, razor-sharp steel spikes, and the spikes are set on a timer. And if I don't escape in a minute and a half, the timer releases the spikes, and the spikes spring towards me at 50 miles an hour. 50. And by the way, to make it more dangerous, the spikes are lit on fire, and I'm covered with gasoline. So if I don't get out, not hit with the spikes, but you go up in the flames at the same time, and it's potentially, you know, very, very dangerous. But it's exciting. You know, it adds an element of kind of drama and suspense to the show. So, you know, all those pieces, we do a piece, I'll tell you another one. We do a piece in the show. It's an original piece where it's a painting. It's a life-size painting of a girl. And I pull the girl out of the painting. And I visibly take the hand of the painting and pull her out. And she steps out of the painting and becomes real. And she dances around the stage, and I make other objects appear for her out of other paintings. And then she instantly disappears and reappears back in the painting. Wow. That one, to me, is a lot of fun because it's like a story. You know, it's all done to music, and it's like a little stage play or a little movie. So each one of those illusions has a different feel to it. You know, the spike escape is dangerous. It's dramatic. The painting piece is very romantic. The rosebush piece is kind of poetic. The steel wall piece is a challenge. The levitation is very triumphant. So each piece kind of has its own, you know, feel to it. And I think that's the other thing. Like a movie, I try and give the audience a good flow of emotions where you're feeling different things. Sometimes you're laughing. Sometimes you're on the edge of your seat. So, you know, again, a long answer to your question, but, you know, I just have so many favorites. Each piece in the show is special to me for different reasons.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head when you were talking about the emotions of it. And I think, you know, that's what I think probably energizes people to be able to go through, because you really kind of give them an outlet, you know, to be able to express those emotions. And, you know, quite often I think people are really turned off from their emotions. I mean, you know, for the, you know, maybe going through the regular typical week in a routine, you know, you don't often have all of those emotions that you just mentioned wrapped up into a show, you know, a very short period of time. So, I mean, it's a great release, you know, for people, I would believe.
Yeah, I hope so. That's definitely my intent. Is to kind of take them on a roller coaster of emotions, as they say, so that they, you know, all positive emotions. So it's a very positive, compelling experience overall. And I'm constantly looking for new ways to add more of that to our show. To add, you know, I always think, where can I get one more laugh or one more, you know, kind of a gasp of amazement or one more reaction or one more. Because to me, that's what it's about. That's why I do what I do. It's all about having, you know, creating moments for the audience to respond to. So, you know, that's a fun challenge for me, is trying to figure out how we can do that.
Yeah. Now, would you say that walking, going through the steel plate, would you say that was probably the most, because you said it took 7 years, would you say that was probably one of the most difficult to maybe have mastered, or was there another one that maybe was most challenging to be able to master?
That one was definitely one of the most difficult, because, you know, there were even from the creation standpoint, I tested out different size walls, different thicknesses of walls. Did I want to come through from back to front? Did I want to go side to side? Did I want, you know, there was just so many ways that could have been shaped and molded, and I didn't want to do any of those elements in any way that wasn't the best that it could be for me, for my preferences, and for what I felt would work best for the audience. You know, creating an illusion is a lot like writing a song. You know, you can get a songwriter to write a song about a subject, but you know, they'll put a lot of themselves and their own perspective or their own feelings into a song. It's the same with an author or a writer or an actor. There's a lot of that person in their artwork. And for me, that's very true about the illusions. It's you know, I try and put what I feel is going to be the best spin on it, obviously for the audience. But, you know, it's kind of my take on it. You know, another magician may have presented it differently, and that's not to say it wouldn't have been less effective, but, you know, it may have been just as effective. But anyways, I picked what I felt would be the most, based on my kind of prerogative, what I thought would be the most impressive for the audience, and that was my goal. So it just took a lot of, as I said, a lot of time, a lot of trial and error. I'll tell you something else. Another piece that took quite a bit of time is a piece that I do where I get lifted up above the stage on a platform, 20 feet above the stage, and I disappear, and I get chained in, and I disappear from that platform, and I end up in the center of the audience. That was a piece that took, it didn't take 7 years like the steel wall did, but to find the perfect way of doing it, even down to the right music and the right lighting, it just took a lot of time. I didn't want to settle for anything that just wasn't as good as I felt we could make it. So that's a piece that took a lot of effort as well.
Yeah, we know, and you just mentioned music and lighting. So, I mean, there's really so much more than just the actual illusion that goes into creating the full effect of what it is that you want to communicate.
Absolutely. You know, when people ask me, you know, what do I recommend if they want to get interested in magic? You know, I always recommend study magic, study everything you can about it, study magic's history, go out and perform as much as you can. But the other thing I tell them is to learn the allied arts, learn, you know, stagecraft, learn choreography, learn lighting, learn public speaking, learn, you know, all of these different elements. Learn music, learn about music, because the music in a magic show, if you're going to do a stage show, it's essential. I try and take music that fits each illusion like a glove. The music is almost as important as the physical prop on stage. You know, again, going back to movies, you know, if you look at certain movies, think about how certain musical elements really add it to the movie. It makes you feel something. It's like Jaws when the shark is coming after a person, or it's like, you know, like E.T. when the bike takes off for the first time and goes up into the sky, or even, you know, we're just coming through Halloween, and the movie Halloween has been all over TV. And I saw an interview with the director of that movie, and he said when the movie was screened, before the music was done, it didn't really have that much of a response. But when they put that scary theme in there and people watched the same movie, it affected people on a completely different level. And so, you know, with our music, even I spent a lot of time going through hundreds of pieces of music to find the right one, and then editing the music so that it fits, you know, each beat and each pace of each magic effect the music needs to fit that. You know, it's not just about putting a piece of music to a performance. Mm-hmm. It's about having the crescendos of the music, the swells of the music, and also the quieter parts of the music fit the crescendos of the magic and fit the quieter parts of the magic. So it almost looks like that music was written specifically for the magic. So it's all those elements together. A slight tangent I'll go off on here. I don't think a lot of people realize how much goes into a magic show. And that's not necessarily a negative, and I'll tell you why. But there's all those elements and all those pieces that have to be figured out. But if you think about it, they really shouldn't think about that, because the goal of a magic show is to make the magic look effortless. When a magician performs, you don't want it to look like it took, you know, 7 years to do. You want it to look like you're just able to effortlessly walk through the wall, or effortlessly float in the air, or effortlessly disappear and reappear somewhere else. That's the goal. So the goal of the magician is to hide all that work, and to hide all that technique, and to hide all those different elements. So, you know, I think because it's so well hidden, I think, you know, people don't realize that certain things could take, you know, in magic could take several years to kind of bring to light. So it's really, it's a dichotomy per se, you know, but again, by the nature of what it is, it has to be that way.
Yeah, that's the sign of, you know, of a good, you know, piece is that it does have that effortless look. But then again, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's just so much that goes into it. Now, you know, you talked about, you know, going through hundreds of different pieces of music to be able to find the right one, the crescendo. Now, when you did the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra event, so here you've got an orchestra. Now, how did you marry the two, you know, with orchestra and maybe what it is that they knew? Did they use music that you had, you know, kind of fit for already for your pieces? Or did you kind of work your magic into things that they knew?
Well, the way that we did that was, and again, that's a great question. That was quite a process. That show took about a year and a half to put together. And we'd performed with symphony orchestras before. We performed with Marvin Hamlisch and the Pittsburgh Pops. We performed with the Grand Rapids Symphony. But, you know, this one, this was for a Halloween theme show. And so we spent a lot of time finding music from different movies that would work, that, number one, that would make a good musical selection for the audience. That was first and foremost. What's going to create a great musical selection for the audience? Number one. Number two, I sent them, we discussed show outlines and the illusions that I thought would work well based on, you know, the feel of the show that we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say, okay, we are going to do a levitation here, and I think that would work well, you know, coming out of intermission. And it's a very dramatic piece. So what music do you have that... So I would describe kind of the feel of the magic. And then they would, from their list of music, they would go, okay, well, what about this song? And they would send it to me, and I would listen to it. And I would try and say, okay, well, this part of the song sounds perfect. And we would kind of, you know, edit the musical arrangement so that you know, the orchestra would know which parts to play and when. So we did that for we had a list of music, we had a list of magic, we married the two, and then when we were on site, we rehearsed, and we rehearsed for many hours, testing everything out and making sure, you know, everything that we thought would work perfectly, and it all worked very well. And, you know, the other thing is you have to make the timing work out so that, you know, if an illusion lasts 3 minutes, you want that music to last 3 minutes. So, you know, as the music is ending, you know, the magic is ending. So we rehearsed it, and we polished it, and it was just, you know, as I said earlier, such a fun experience. I wish I could go back and just do it. Oh, I say that about all of our shows because I love all of them. But it was a blast. So yeah, it was a unique process, certainly different from, a standard stage show, but, you know, it was, it was, it was a lot of fun, and it all went very well. So it was quite a process putting everything together.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I wondered about that. So now, you know, you do obviously a lot of large events, you know. So when, let's say, a client comes to you and wants to have you for their event, do you kind of tailor your illusions and all that to what it is that the client wants? How does that relationship work?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, every event, my thinking is every event out there is different. So having one show and trying to shoehorn that in could be very challenging sometimes. So, I mean, last week alone, on Monday we did the halftime show. On Friday we did the symphony show. Both completely different venues, different audiences, different arrangement. I mean, one show is completely surrounded. One show is up on a stage, you know, different illusions. So, you know, we customize one show to fit the halftime show, one show to fit the symphony show. And I do that a lot. And, you know, we are always structuring our show to fit whatever the specific event is. About 2 years ago, we were invited to perform for the 4th of July parade in Washington, D.C. And that was unique, for example, because you're on a moving float. So, you know, what do you do? How do you make that work? Well, we made a girl float above a float as we moved down Constitution Avenue in Washington. But that was a case where the magic had to be customized, not only the magic, but a lot of the various elements to accommodate the fact that, again, you're on a smaller space and you're moving and you're, you know, the float is making bends and turns and different things. And so, yeah, it's always about structuring the magic to fit each event. You know, I'd almost say no two shows are the same. That's not really true. I mean, shows, you know, when we play theaters, when we play casinos, we have our show, our standard show that we take out. But we certainly customize it as needed for you know, each specific project. And you know what? That's one of the things that keeps it fun for me as well, is that, you know, we're constantly doing different things. Every event is different. And I enjoy that. I enjoy that process a lot.
Yeah, I would think that would add, a little bit of spice to the performance. Now, when you're doing large interviews, stadium types interviews, are there any particular challenges that you really kind of have to, because, you know, like you mentioned, kind of like in the round, you know, in those particular cases, that it's kind of like you want everyone to be able to see what it is that you're doing.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I mean, because you have people watching from 360 degrees and they're looking down at you and you're outdoors. You know, most of the time we do the stadiums. In Phoenix, it's kind of an enclosed stadium. But a lot of the stadiums we do, they're outside. So you have wind and you have different, you know, weather to contend with. It's a very unique undertaking. And so we've developed several illusions that could be performed in those environments. And it also, quite honestly, can go out and be performed, they're self-contained, because the halftime in a football game is like a military operation. When that clock starts counting down, those seconds are, you only have X amount of seconds. The show cannot run long. So if we have to be out there for 7 minutes, it can't be 7 minutes and 3 seconds. It has to be 7 minutes. So, we become very adept at being extremely detailed on our performances down to the second in those environments, so that, you know, as we're finishing up, you know, the NFL is ready to kick back into gear and you know, the teams are going to come out and start the game again. So, because you can't hold any of it up. So talk about planning. It's a lot of planning.
Yeah, I bet. Well, we're down to kind of the last few minutes. So is there any place or event that you have not yet performed, but you'd love to?
Wow. Well, you know, there are a lot of
curveball.
No, that's a great question. You know, and that's one that I think about every day. That's one of the things that kind of, one of my driving forces is, where can I take magic? Where can I That's how we started to do the stadium shows, is I said to myself, one morning, I said, where is one of the largest venues that we could explore? Where is one of the largest places where we can have the largest live audience? Where is that? And so I figured stadiums, and that's, you know, why we've really moved in that direction. We've done about 25 of the stadium shows so far over the past several years. But there's a lot to do. You know, one of the big initiatives that we're working on now is television. We've done quite a bit of television, which I love. One of the driving forces in what we do is combining magic and television. I think they fit very well together. So I'm working on a number of television projects for 2016 and beyond, some of which, they're all very, I'm excited about all of them, but a couple of them are really, you know, if they come together, they're going to be really, really different, you know, kind of a really kind of departure for I think some of the previous magic television projects that have been done. So that's one of the directions that I'm really pushing in to continue to grow and expand in and to, you know, move forward even more in is television. We were in two series this year. We have a couple more series coming up next year that we're going to be in addition to these other projects. So really that's kind of the main target I'm focused on. But, you know, live shows, we're traveling all the time, and there's just so many places to take magic. There's just so many more places to take magic around the country and around the world. I think I will run out of places to visit. I think there's more places to visit than I'll ever be able to get to. So I have, I have many, many more mountains to climb out there that I certainly look forward to.
Well, that's great. Well, now you are on Facebook and Twitter, so I'm following you on both. So I'm going to be able to hopefully follow you, your journey, see where you pop up next, so to speak, and be able to watch you there. So people out there, if you use those social media platforms, be sure to join Michael on those. I'm really thankful to be able to speak with you today, Michael. It's really been a lot of fun.
Robert, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much. I truly appreciate, you know, you having me on the hour. I just looked at it's the clock. I can't believe we've been talking for an hour. You made the time disappear, if you pardon the expression. It's been a pleasure. It's truly been a pleasure, and I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Michael Grandinetti. And again, in the show page description, I have a direct link to his website, which is www.michaelgrandinetti.com. Be sure to check out that. He's got a lot of videos there. And also, I have a direct link in the show page description to his video highlights. And in that video, you can see a lot of the illusions that he spoke about on today's show. So everybody check that out and be sure to follow Michael and see where he shows up next. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.